Welcome to the Seahawkers Podcast, your Seattle Seahawks podcast by 12s for 12s. With your hosts, Adam Emmert.
You know what you do when life gives you lemons? You don't make lemonade. You kick life in the balls and you demand it gives you something better, like bacon.
Bacon's delicious.
And Brandon Schultz.
If you want to put your money toward helping this team win, buy a ticket to the game on Sunday and bring your adult voice and scream your adult brains out. That will make 10 times more the difference.
Go Hawks!
Be on a quest to own the West. We make the ground shake on game day 12-10. Yay's feeling it is vital. The Seahawks coming to take division titles. We are Coach Carroll, cause he's in. I'm in. We all in.
Welcome to episode 99 of the Seahawkers Podcast. I'm Brandon Schultz, and joining me, my good buddy, Adam Emmert.
99 podcasts on the wall, 99 podcasts to go. I don't know how it goes, but, you know, we're close.
We're adding bottles to the wall instead of taking them down, though.
Oh, is that how that goes?
That's cool. How it works.
Well, it's fun to be recording episode 99 here on a snowy day in Montana, Brandon.
It's a snowy day.
It's good to see it come down. Man, if it's not a white Christmas, I'm always a little bummed. I don't like Christmas, but if it's a brown Christmas, no, check that. If it's a gold Christmas, I'm not quite as happy as if it's a white Christmas.
Yeah.
No, that's not racist. Stop it.
Stop. No, and it seems like every year we could count on having a white Thanksgiving, and now it's mid-December, mm-hmm. And we're like, yeah, checking our calendars to make sure that we're going to have a white Christmas. So it is good to see the snow coming down. I'm mm-hmm. sure all the skiers are happy. You know, it's good times when you get can take the kids out in the snow, build a snowman.
Oh, absolutely. Snowflakes are coming down, dropping out of the sky, just like Russell Wilson touchdown passes.
Heck,
I think
yes.
he threw five more just between the Ravens game and since we started recording this, Brandon.
You know he did. You know he did because that's all he does is throw touchdown passes.
Maybe he's lofting them up to Ciara, you know, like, you know, in the backyard or something. But he's throwing touchdown passes right now, you know it. Or maybe to Macklemore in the pool. I don't know, but he's throwing touchdown passes right now.
Right. And so we're going to get into that. We're going to talk about Russell Wilson just bawling like no other quarterback in NFL history, even. So we got to talk some Russell Wilson. Of course, we're going to talk about the running back situation. It was a gut punch this last weekend, the Seahawks losing Thomas Rawls for the rest of the season. You know, a guy that just we all had high expectations for. He had 44 rushing yards just on the first series of that game. And then to see him go out, it was rough.
It was rough. And, you know, you used gut punch. I was going to go with nut punch because it felt a little bit lower, a little bit more dire.
Mm-hmm.
Watching Rawls go down, I guess I was just kind of stunned. I just don't expect a young rookie to go down with an injury. You know what I mean? Especially a guy built as stoutly as he is.
Yeah.
So that was one of those things where, and it was just unfortunate the way that it went down. I mean, just a kind of a regular tackle, but a guy ends up kind of pinning his legs underneath of him as he gets bent the other way.
Mm-hmm.
Ankle goes kapowie, and that's that. But the good news is it's not ligaments. It's none of that stuff. Sure, he's out for the year, but coming back from a bone break generally isn't nearly as serious as coming back from like torn soft tissue and things of that nature.
Yeah, see, so. I thought the initial reports though were that it was a ligament issue, and that's why they didn't expect him to bounce back quite as soon, and that's why it was a little more severe than initially expected. So
interesting. The only thing I had read was broken ankle. So
yeah,
maybe by broken they mean like the stuff inside the ankle too. Like tendons and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I think there's other stuff going on. I'm not a doctor, so I don't know. It wasn't a CL, but it was other types of issues that made it a little bit more serious. So,
gotcha. Well,
the reason why it wasn't, it was a little bit higher, you know, more toward the gut area for me is we have this guy kind of waiting in the wings, Marshawn Lynch, the young guy. Maybe you haven't heard of him.
He's like a yeast mode or greased mode or no beast mode. That guy.
That guy. Yeah.
That guy. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, apparently, he's kind of just filling out that backup role for now, and we're going to see him in a couple weeks. I don't know. We'll have to just play that by ear. He's not one of those players that you read a lot about. So
right.
We'll just have to see.
I hear he's kind of quiet too when it comes to the media. So there's that. But. Huh.
That might be why.
I had a theory about this I threw out on the Hangout, Brandon. And I think this, like, of course it's a bummer Thomas Rawls goes down, right? But he's having an outstanding year. We all know he's the future. And one thing that I thought could be kind of awkward was when Marshawn was ready to come back, him retaking the starting role, because you know he is.
Right.
I mean, because he's our bell cow. He's our lead guy. He's earned it. I mean, he's the man.
Yeah.
But it's hard to sit a guy with that much talent, too, in Thomas Rawls. So having Rawls go down now, we only have a couple of games to survive here. We're going to make the playoffs in some way, shape, or form. It's going to happen. And look, at that point, Beast Mode can come back. He can put on the Superman cape. He can look like the hero and help power the Seahawks through the playoffs here. And he doesn't have to worry about, you know, if he has a couple bad carries or whatever it is, that Thomas Rawls is going to be plugged in and break up his rhythm.
Yeah.
And he can go out and is what looks like his last season as a Seahawk, being the featured back. And so I think timing-wise, it kind of all works out in a way. That's my little silver lining, or gray wolf lining, or wolf gray.
Wolf gray lining.
Wolf gray lining, yeah.
Very nice. Well, what do you say we get into this Seahawks matchup against the Ravens? Now we missed our opportunity. I want to thank everybody for kind of hanging in there with us over these past couple weeks, because kind of with the holidays and work schedules with us, we were lucky to be able to get out a preview or a recap of the Vikings game. We missed our opportunity to get out a preview of the Ravens game. And we didn't hear a whole lot of complaining, not like the off season when we missed a week. So I was appreciative that, folks weren't too hard on us.
Well, in fairness, Brandon, we did get out the Vikings recap. That's one pod.
Yeah.
And then we did get out an NFL show, all picks in 32 IP. I'm just talking backwards all day today.
That's okay.
You'll get 32 there. Picks and IPA.
Just got to settle into your rhythm.
That's two shows. That's two shows that week, and we just missed on getting out the third one. So, in fairness, two out of three ain't bad.
And no bonus show either, so we're going to have to make up for that.
Oh, crap. I totally even forgot about that. All right. Well, little honorary do better for me.
It's for all of us. I mean, for me, we don't need to get into all the stuff going on outside of the pod, but... just work schedules and life schedules. We will get back on track and let's get into this Ravens game, because the Seahawks win 35-6. They go on the road to Baltimore. The game shifts from a primetime game to a morning game, and yet the Seahawks put up a primetime performance, putting up a type of score that you would normally see them put up in that primetime slot.
Well, unfortunately, the Ravens didn't put up a primetime performance, and that's exactly why that game got flexed out of its time slot. I mean, it's Jimmy Clausen and crew.
Yeah.
No, they didn't know that when they flexed it, but even still, even if it was Flacco or Schaub, it's just not a good team. But the fun part today on this is we get to have a bless me fest for Russell Wilson on this podcast.
That's essentially what it is, right?
Yeah, and look... He's our quarterback, and quarterback is always the most interesting topic to everybody. At least that's the general consensus. I mean, there's a lot of other things that we can get into, but man, let's just talk about the man. Let's just talk about the man. Number three, your quarterback, Russell Carrington Wilson, going off for the fourth week in a row and making defenses look stupid. Just stupid.
Yeah, and maybe some of the opponents in the last four games have been a little bit cupcake in nature, but and that hits this team at a pretty good time in the season. But still, to put it in perspective, there's been four game stretches where quarterbacks have faced easy opponents over the years and years of the NFL.
Yeah.
But these last performances, these four performances, no other quarterback in NFL history has put up the kind of performance consistently that Russell Wilson in the last four games. He's the first quarterback to throw three touchdown passes, at least three in the last four games, have 70% completion rate or better, and throw for zero interceptions. That puts him at a quarterback rating of 138 or higher in each of the last four games. No NFL quarterback in history has done that.
It's scorching. And just like I said, in history, I've never seen anything quite like it. And the thing that kind of draws my ire about this a little bit is everybody's like, yeah, it hasn't been against some of the greatest opponents. Yeah, sure. But you know how many people bang on Rodgers or Manning or Brady when they torch an easy team?
Right.
Nobody.
Nobody.
They talk about their greatness, and they talk about how they just threw five TDs and how amazing they are and rah, rah, rah. No, look, here's the thing. Everybody, I don't understand the caveat that always comes after Russell Wilson. Yeah, he's on this tremendous streak right now and just torrid. And but you know, yeah. It was against easy teams.
But you know what? You just brought up three names, Adam. Brady, Manning, and Rodgers. Those are like three of the only other guys to go for a stretch like that with no interceptions. So even just take away the fact that Russell put himself in elite company just by not throwing any interceptions over that stretch of games.
Yeah, and that's just it. I mean, he compares exactly the same way when you're looking at the numbers. He compares exactly the same way when you look at his career. Look at, I mean, I hate the stat quarterbacks wins, but he is a winning quarterback. He's been to two Super Bowls. He's won one already. You know, I mean, that's what Tom Brady did, and yet he was anointed as amazing right out of the gate. And yet there's all these people that I just hear John Gruden in the back of my head every time I hear these people talking, and it was him trying to get under Russell's skin in his little QB camp. Yeah. And he's looking at Russell saying, too short, too short, too short, too short.
Yeah.
And he just says it over and over and over again. And I feel like that's what I hear every time one of these critics comes out and says, look at all these amazing things he's doing, but.
Right.
And I'm tired of it. I'm tired of it. Like, just different people saying, yeah, I mean, he's playing from the pocket, but he's not really playing from the pocket right now. BS. BS. He is playing lights out from the pocket right now. It is unbelievable.
We even saw the TV folks actually draw a pocket on the as part of the TV screen. We got to see it physically.
That was amazing to watch Solomon Wilcots draw the pocket thingy.
Yeah,
like, you know,
there it is.
Like, look at this, and every Seahawks fan everywhere was like, oh, like there it is. It's a pocket thingy, and look at it. Look what happens when they do it. The touchdowns happen.
Yeah.
Like, it's
multiple.
Amazing. Yeah. It's amazing. And look, you got to give that offensive line credit. And they, even though Football Outsider still has them ranked 29th in the league in pass protection, they're
moving up.
They're moving on up, you know, from 32. But just look at how little improvement Russell needed to be the quarterback that he has been all year. It's really a testament to the offensive line play at that point, is just watching Russell be able to put his talent to full use, whereas earlier in the season, he's just trying to tread water behind an absolute sieve. Because I think that 32nd ranking, when they were the 32nd ranked passing offensive line, pass blocking offensive line, I think that could have been, if there had been another 8 teams in the league, they'd have been 40th. You know, like, it was 32 and a distant 32. And
yeah.
So that 32 to 29th is actually a huge...
They made up a huge amount of ground.
A huge amount of ground. And a little bit of that, a little bit of give Daryl Bevel credit, people, and Tom Cable credit for what they've done coaching-wise and making some tweaks to the offense during the bye week, using that time to change some stuff around, especially with Jimmy going down and all of that, give them some credit too. And all of those factors have come together to watch Russell Wilson light the earth on fire.
Well, let's run down some of these touchdowns, Adam, because the first score of the game that put the Seahawks up 7-0, you talk about the offensive line giving Russell Wilson all day to throw. He drops back, has all kinds of time, allows Tyler Lockett to get open, and Russell Wilson just throws a dart to a wide open Lockett right in the back of the end zone.
Russell has three receivers to his left. The tight end, Luke Wilson, to the right. Russell out of the shotgun. Takes a snap. Looks. Has all kinds of time. Now he throws to the middle of the end zone. It's caught for a touchdown. Seahawks. Tyler Lockett in the back of the end zone. Wide open. And just great protection for Russell Wilson. Had all day to stand back there and wait for somebody to come open. And the rookie Tyler Lockett did from 8 yards out.
And that was cool because... Again, Solomon Wilcots gets on there. He's like, you know why he could do it? He had all sorts of time. And he shows how they slid coverage with or the blocking assignment with the offensive line and were able to pick up all the guys. And Russell stood his ground. And finally, when somebody started to come free as far as a rusher goes, he sees Lockett streaking backside across the end zone, wide open, and, you know, hits him for the touchdown. And Tyler Lockett, man, Like, we were going to have a Bless Me Fest for Russell on this pod, but look, this is 2 weeks in a row now where Tyler Lockett has taken a huge hit after making a big reception.
The Ravens rush five. Russell throws far side down the sideline, reaching up, making the catch. Tyler Lockett, he is hammered, but he hangs on inside the 40-yard line of the Ravens, and a late flag comes in as Tyler Lockett took another shot to the head as he catches the ball, and once again he hangs on for a 26-yard gain, and let's tack on 15 after that.
Can defenses stop unnecessarily roughing him? Because that would be, if we could not have that in back-to-back weeks, I'd feel a whole lot better.
Here's the thing. You can't unnecessarily rough him. He's tougher than that.
Yeah.
That dude is tough. You joked earlier in the season when Tyler had that kind of tackle-breaking touchdown catch near the goal line.
Yeah.
Yeah, if he was the tougher receiver.
The more physical receiver between him and Jimmy Graham.
And you know what?
He is.
He's, look, for example, he's not as stout as him at this point in his career, but I think he'll get a little bigger as, you know, he is in an NFL program and, you know, lifts and all that. But he's on a toughness level, not an attitude level, but just on a toughness level. He reminds me a lot of Steve Smith, undersized and tough as nails. I mean, he really is. He took a shot after catching a ball down the sideline in this last game. And that was the one where I was like, oh, okay, now seeing 2 weeks back-to-back of him being that kind of receiver, where I go, oh, okay, this is real now.
Yeah.
This is real with Tyler Lockett. It's time to say it. He is a fantastic receiver and also a great returner and a difference maker that the Seahawks have now drafted on offense for the first time in for freaking ever. And it feels so good. It feels so good to see a guy that you invested that much draft capital in be not only what you had hoped for, but exceed it. I didn't understand his toughness coming into the league. And it's a deciding factor between that and his route running. He's a pro's pro, and he's going to be around for a long time. That Wilson to Lockett connection, get used to it, boys and girls, because it's going to sound like a lot more touchdowns.
Yeah, speaking of that one, we did have a sexy deep ball sighting in this game, and that was to start off the beginning of the fourth quarter, Adam, where Russell Wilson throws it deep to Tyler Lockett, 49 yards for the score right down the sideline.
Seattle goes with an offset eye with Tuku Afu and Fred Jackson in the backfield with Russell under center and a slot to the right side. Here comes the blitz. Russell has a free play.
Hey, I'm Russell Wilson, and I throw a sexy deep ball.
Throws downfield, got a man out there, slogging, and makes the catch down the far sidelines. He is in. Touchdown, Seahawks! Tyler Lockett getting in behind Ladarius Webb and taking it in for six. And Russell Wilson, he just cranked up and threw an absolute beauty, a 49-yard touchdown strike.
Yeah, and I just gushed about a whole nother play, and he had a 49-yard touchdown reception.
Right.
You know, like, I mean, just glossing, right? I mean, and because his two scores aren't even the story of the game. He wasn't even the best receiver on the team in this game. And he played amazing football and really putting himself in the rookie of the year conversation on the offensive side of the ball as much as a receiver can with Jameis and Marcus being out there. But really playing lights out. And on that play, his speed, he's made Webb look stupid. Just made him look stupid. And just little subtle moves on the route to get himself open, and Russell having the trust in him, they have really developed that chemistry.
No, it's amazing, and there's been two rookies in NFL history now that have had the type of performance where, you know, at least five touchdowns and punt return, kickoff return touchdown as well, and that other player other than Tyler Lockett in NFL history is Gale Sayers. Now, when you're drawing comparison to that as a rookie player, you're doing things right. So well done, Tyler Lockett.
And for you younger folks, if you have not heard of Gale Sayers, just look it up. Just look it up. I'm telling you, this guy, if he would have played in today's day and age where they could have taken care of his knees the way that they can now, it would have been a whole different thing. That guy's a Hall of Famer, and he was... He's a little like Bo Jackson in the sense that came in and dominated for just a couple short years, but he was so dominant and had a knee injury, and that was that. But for Tyler Lockett to be in that kind of company, That tells that there's a there's not many. Well, obviously, only those two.
Only those two. That's it. That's the company.
Can kind of do that, but I mean that it's it the athleticism, the just the playmaking ability, and the way to, they see the field. It's just it's a rare gift, man. And we found a guy. We found a guy in the draft, a wide receiver. I can't get over that. You
and
know?
In
I'm
the
so
third
excited.
Round, no less. No, that's it makes you wonder how a guy like that could slip that far. And yeah, no question.
I know how. It's just like your quarterback slipped to the third round.
Right.
He's too small. He's too short. Too short. Too short. Too short. Like, that's what everybody says. Nah.
Well, Steve Smith heard that. So, you know, you brought up the comparison to Steve Smith, and he heard that kind of comparison or those types of things when he was coming out of his draft year. I've heard interviews with him where he's talked about he kept the piece of paper in his locker, the review of his draft pick in the third round of them saying that, you know, they wasted a pick on a third round punt returner. And
right.
And that's one of those things that helped motivate him to keep him going and keep getting better. So, you know, the Seahawks seem to have this way to find guys who, you know, have a type of chip on their shoulder and want to be better. And just they're motivated in that way.
You know, it's funny. You hear Pete come out this week and be like, yeah, you know, the reason is Tyler works so hard, right? He's always the last one out there catching balls, and he's always the first one in, you know, watching film or whatever. I only have one question. I'm calling out Pete a little bit. There can only be one guy who's
the first one in
and last one out, yet somehow Russell's the first one and Earl's the first one. Do they all like roll up
together carpool
in like
together.
A line? Like, and they all roll into their parking spot the exact same time. We're like, what's up, Tyler? Hey, Earl. What's shaking, Russ? And like they all walk in like holding hands.
Yeah,
that's the only way they can all be first. Like,
you don't know. You aren't
one.
There at the facility that early in the morning every day.
I know. I don't know which one it is, but I do know only one can be first. I mean, that's just the way of the world.
It's true. It's true.
Yeah. But you know, the other guy in this game that in the last few games has been Dougie Fresh.
Yeah.
Doug Baldwin.
I mean,
three touchdown catches in this game. Just he's that receiver that we had seen the last couple years finally coming back out, like the last, you know, few games. And I don't know I think part of it is Jimmy going down, and so a lot of those looks are going to Doug Baldwin instead.
And Tyler Lockett, yeah.
Yeah, and I just think, look, and he stepped up big time. His game, this is the best he's ever played, and he looks faster, he looks stronger, he looks more precise out there. And I mean, short of one drop, I mean, he's awesome. He's awesome right now.
I think he got jinxed on that drop, because if I'm not mistaken, they showed a graphic or going into that game, they were saying that Doug Baldwin, of all receivers, had gone the longest without an actual drop. And so I think he got media jinxed on that one.
I think you're right. I think you're right. He did. But look, he's so critical to this offense in the sense of, I mean, we talk about Marshawn being heart and soul of the team, or even Russ a little bit to a degree, but Doug Baldwin's one of those guys.
Yeah.
Like he's one of those core guys that gets guys fired up and really is a leader in the locker room. And so for him to start coming through as they make their playoff push, that's the guy that drags the rest of the team with you, the rest of the offense with him, and being like, here we go, let's get it going. And it's important to see him show out and ball out. And him and Russell, like, I watched Tom Brady, right, with, say, like, Julian Edelman.
Yeah.
Julian Edelman had been on that team for a while up until these last few years. I mean, this is, what, their fourth year or so together?
It's been a couple.
And then you see them start to really click and have that chemistry where they can shred any defense and any coverage because they know each other's subtleties to the finest point.
Mm-hmm.
And there's hasn't been a lot of guys Russell has worked with consistently over time, except for Doug Baldwin.
Yeah.
And this is year four. And now you're seeing them have that kind of chemistry where they know each other's subtleties inside and out. And I think that's a huge part of it. I mean, it takes time. I know it sounds crazy, but between the quarterback learning the position and learning the speed of the game and having, I think you've seen the light flip on for Russ, where everything had, it had slowed down before,
yeah,
but now it's slowed down on that elite level that the elite levels play at, the elite level players play at. And It's just so easy for him now. And then having that chemistry with Doug and then starting to develop it with Tyler, man, this passing game is dangerous. And it's weird saying that going into the playoffs that we're going to need this passing game going down the stretch. Like, this is where we're going to butter our bread.
Well, you definitely see a little bit of an evolution with this team, you know, especially with the offensive line giving more protection. We saw, you know, the one guy that you didn't mention was Jermaine Kearse, and we started to see him get involved in this last game, too. So if you have a guy like Jermaine Kearse who can be a dependable and reliable receiver, and then have guys like Doug Baldwin being the touchdown machine that he has been over these last three games. You know, we talk about people being in elite level company. The only guy to catch 8 touchdowns in a stretch of 3 games, the only other player other than Doug Baldwin, Jerry Rice.
Wow.
So, there you go.
Wow. You know, I heard he was good.
I do. I know he played for the 49ers, and he did, you know, finish a Hall of Fame career with the Seahawks, but I've heard of him.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the debate is, right, him or Jim Brown for the greatest player
right
in the history of the league, like, despite position? Do you hear that a lot? But give Jermaine some love, man. 7 receptions. 7 for 74 yards. I mean, that's over 10 a pop.
Mm-hmm.
That's huge. And being that possession guy and coming up in big-time moments. And, look, this receiving core, it's been really, really impressive. It's been really, really impressive. And they needed to take the step up when Jimmy went down. We were going to see, you know. And I think maybe they took it a little personal that they had brought in this guy to be the main focus of the passing attack for the second straight year. You know, it was Percy before. Well, I guess 2 years prior for Percy. But really, I mean, the second year was the year that you're looking at him to make an impact. And now Jimmy. And I think there's a little bit – I don't think they dislike Jimmy. I don't think there's any animosity, but I definitely would think that they were like, oh, yeah? Well, I mean, we're good, too. You know, we're good, too. And I think they're really showing it. And, man, the offense, it's really amazing to watch the transformation of it and for it to become more of Russell Wilson's team and for him to make that transition as the – center of the offense, much like Tom Brady did in his career. Those first couple Super Bowls where he went to, that was defensive centric team.
Yeah,
you know, don't make mistakes, dink and dunk, and people would have called Tom Brady a game manager until about year 4, year 5 when he really turned it around and started lighting people up. And you know, it's weird to make the comparison, but Russ is kind of on that same path.
He's on that same path. You see him. He's already tied his rookie touchdown record. You see him. He's on pace to pass Matt Hasselbeck's Seahawks record for the number of yards thrown in a season for the Seahawks. He's on pace to beat Dave Craig's touchdown passing record for the team. Just in his fourth year, Adam, he is on pace to put up numbers better than any Seahawks quarterback in team history.
It's amazing. And look, I want to talk about him in the pocket a little bit more, too, because I think that's the reason why he's approaching Matt Hasselbeck for most yards in a season and, you know, throwing as many touchdowns as he has. And Shail Kapadia of ESPN.com, and I hope I say his name right every
Kapadia,
time.
Kapadia, I think. Yeah.
Kapadia. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, dude, because these are some good stats. But, you know, a couple things to keep in mind. Russell Wilson, his passer rating from in the pocket the last 4 weeks, 152.3.
That's almost as high as it goes.
I don't know how high it goes, but that's I know that's right at the very edge of it. I mean, it doesn't get much better than that. He's completed almost 82% of his balls. And he's thrown for over 1,000 yards at 11 yards per attempt. That's pushing the ball down the field by a large amount. Look, in this season, on the season, we're even taking into account when the offensive line was a dumpster fire underneath a nuclear explosion. Like, this is true fact. Russell Wilson is the league best in passer rating from the pocket this season at 117.6. And his completion percentage is the highest out of every quarterback in this league from the pocket at 72.9.
Mm-hmm.
That's all season.
Yeah.
Out of everybody.
And he has the highest outside of the pocket completion percentage, too.
Right. So, look, when you talk about people in the way they like to bang on this guy, and sure, if you haven't been paying attention and maybe you're just going back to his first 2 years and you're not taking into account year three and year four, where we've all seen it, it was just a matter of the rest of the team putting it together around him a little bit.
Yeah.
Is this guy is, he's on another level. He really is. He's in that top three discussion now. You can't hold him out of it. And if you do, you are a heightist. Like, it's not racist. You're a heightist. You discriminate against people under 6 foot that play the quarterback position, and you're evaluating it wrong. Mm-hmm. And I just don't know the critics. I just can't understand what they're seeing that I'm not seeing, because they're like, well, he gets easy completions. Well, you don't bang on Brady when he's got a wide open Gronk.
Yeah, you're supposed to throw to the guys that are wide open. That's kind of the point.
Yeah, I'm sorry that he's dealing. Like, yeah. I mean, I don't understand. And when he has to put it in a tight window, he does. So you're gonna kill him because beginning of the year was just trying to save his own life, behind that offensive line, and then you're gonna kill him when he's getting it done later in the season when he doesn't have to do it. Like, what? You're killing him no matter what.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand it. He's on. This is the best quarterback play I've seen. It's right up there with some of those Montana years. Where
that's what I'm saying. The last four games, you haven't seen anything like that kind of performance. And that's why it's so much fun to watch.
It really is. And I hope you're all enjoying it too, because it's coming at a time where the Seahawks are just obliterating people with a quadrillion points. And it's a good gosh darn thing they are, because, man, if I'm going to be a little pissy about one thing after this game, Jimmy Clausen threw for 274 yards. Jimmy Clausen threw for 274 yards. Let me say it again in case you missed it. Jimmy freaking Clausen threw for 274 yards. Man, the Seahawks are going to have to score points to win games. Like, it's just not the same against in the passing defense.
Yeah, I know you're kind of maybe picking nits in this sort of situation because, Adam, if you look at the scoreboard, the defense did only give up 6 points. And this is the fourth road game in a row where the defense hasn't allowed a touchdown. So if you can go on the road four straight games, not allow a touchdown, you can't be too mad at the defense now, even if it is Jimmy Clausen throwing for 270 yards. But, they only get 6 points out of that. And so I think a little bit of credit goes to the defense for the type of performance. They're a little bit overshadowed, too, in the sense the fact that Russell Wilson, dealing like he is, not getting a whole lot of credit as to what they've been doing on the field, too. Because shutting down the run game, I mean, they really made Baltimore a one-dimensional team. They had to throw the ball. It comes down to the play. The thing for me in this game, Adam, it came down to the play where Frank Clark, Michael Bennett, they get that tackle on the running back, and Allen fumbles the ball. Bobby Wagner, it just magically goes in his hands. It doesn't even touch the ground, which is weird for a fumble, right, to not even hit the ground. Wagner gets the ball. Two plays later, and Russell Wilson's throwing to Doug Baldwin, just a 14-yard dart touchdown to the end zone, and the Seahawks are up 14-3. And really, once that point hits, the Ravens don't have any answer because they can't run the ball.
Well, no, and we knew that coming into this game, and we knew that Buck Allen's biggest strength was catching it out of the backfield. But look, I mean, you say, well, they only gave up 6 points. Well, let's talk about quality of opponent a little bit, and like, you can't be that mad. Well, I don't know, because here's the thing. If Jimmy Clausen can move the ball up and down the field,
yeah,
then I know for a fact any quality quarterback you can find in the playoffs is going to be able to move the ball up and down the field. And the difference between that quarterback and Jimmy Clausen is punching it into the end zone.
Yeah.
And that's why they're starting caliber quarterbacks. That's why they're leading their teams to the playoffs. So the idea that, sure, they haven't given up a lot of points to, say, somebody like Jimmy Clausen, doesn't mean Big Ben, which you wouldn't see in the playoffs, obviously, because of AFC, but the analogy remains, come in and just torch you again. And that's the part that bothers me. I'm not seeing, look, Russell Wilson and the offense played a defense that's all sorts of banged up, right? And they did exactly what you do to that defense. They destroyed them.
Mm-hmm.
They tore them apart every which way. So when you have a defense that comes up against an offense that's missing everybody, just like, just like their defense is, you expect our defense to just dominate them in the same exact sense, where Jimmy Clausen should have more than 80 yards passing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Especially when that's kind of been your bugaboo. And I don't know. It just worries me a little bit. I'm not mad about it, but like it's like.
I think I know what you mean, because I watched that last drive of the Ravens right before halftime. You know, they get the ball on the 20. There's only 38 seconds left. And you see Clausen, you know, go deep for 37 yards, completed 37-yard pass again on Deshaun Shedd. And then the play immediately after that, you know, another 21 yards, you know, Earl Thomas in coverage. And at that point, I had flashbacks to Atlanta and Matt Ryan, you know, just throwing two passes, getting them in field goal range and you know, kicking the go-ahead touchdown. Now, this was only a field goal to go up, you know, to still be down 14-6, but it still drew the same kind of comparisons to me.
Oh, man. I jumped behind my couch. I was having flashbacks. Like, it was like... Like I'm so a poor veteran that like fought in some gnarly war, man. Like it felt similar, I think. But yeah, it was so frustrating to watch. And look, they couldn't cover Kamar Aiken like half the game. Like whenever Richard was not on Kamar Aiken,
yeah,
he was lighting him up. And look, and that's some credit to Kamar Aiken. He's had a really solid year, filling in for Steve Smith, who went down with the Achilles earlier in the year. And so that was, look, Shedd is better than Williams.
Yeah.
Like it definitely looks that way. There's definitely better chemistry there, but he's not perfect. And Burley's still having his struggles in the slot. Thank goodness Jeremy Lane's back. He's playing at a pretty solid level as he's knocking off the rust. But I think my point with Jimmy throwing for the yards that he did and that little rant there was more the idea that we need to understand this team is different, and they're going to have to win differently through the playoffs this year. And the way Russell's playing now, he's going to have to do this against everybody that he faces going through the playoffs. This is our formula right now, because the defense isn't the same. It's not the same. And we can't, because they were on such a high level,
yeah,
for so long, and you lose so many players. You know, whatever the reason is, I mean, it's just hard to sustain that. It just is.
The thing
is, it's not like they're playing bad.
No,
it's not like they're playing bad.
They're the number two defense in the NFL. They're the number two. So they've dropped one spot.
When you watch the game, do they feel like the number two defense in the NFL to you?
Well, I think they do, in a sense that I think it just feels different to us because we're so used to seeing a number one defense that's far and above everybody else.
Right.
But when you take the way that they've, you know, they've gone on this four game stretch where they haven't been allowing touchdowns. So, you know, that your performances against good, the thing is, you go back to the year where they won the Super Bowl, right? And we talk about this all the time, how they made Hall of Fame quarterbacks look like, you know, average, you know, below the Dalton line, you know, and that doesn't even,
yeah,
apply anymore. But at the time,
no, yeah,
those,
yeah,
kind of quarterbacks that were, you know, below replacement level quarterbacks, and they aren't doing that now. They're making, you know, good quarterbacks are able to dissect this defense, and that's the difference. But it's still,
yeah,
it's still a quality defense that 30 other teams in the NFL would love to have right now.
Oh, absolutely. But I'm just saying, you're not going to win 15-12.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, a bunch of games like that. That's not, Russell's going to have to put up 27 points.
And the difference is too, and go back to earlier in the year, were those games where Russell Wilson wasn't getting the offensive line protection to where he could drive down the field for those game winning scores. And I feel like he has that type of offensive line now, that if the defense were to play one of those games like the Panthers or the Packers or the Rams, that Russell Wilson would have the type of offensive line that he could stand behind and lead a game-winning drive, where he didn't have that earlier.
I think that's an excellent point. And I think it kind of speaks to what I was trying to say, but you kind of summed it up nicely. And the idea is that in the clutch now, right, it's when it comes to finish time,
yeah,
we're not counting on the defense to be the hammer.
Mm.
We're counting on the offense and Russell Wilson to be the hammer and be the unit that finishes a game with that extra score or that long drive to milk out the clock,
mm-hmm,
or whatever it is. That's that's where right now my faith is in the team in those clutch moments. It's more on the offensive side of the ball than the defensive side of the ball. I feel like the defense, with all their stats and everything, are, again, number two and all that, but they do it in that middle portion of the game. But when it comes down to these, like, two-minute drives and these, like, little clutch moments, I don't feel like they're nearly as clutch. And I just – that's just how it feels. Now, look, defensive line had another whale of a game. These guys are playing outstanding yeah. football.
Yeah, and to me, the Cleveland Browns game is going to be a little bit of a test because here's a team that has a pretty good offensive line. It's a pretty good
Stop
one.
Stop it!
It's good.
Oh, come on.
It's better than your average line. Yeah.
Okay. okay.
So, but before we get into that, too, Richard Sherman had his second interception on the year, mm-hmm. came against former Seahawks player Chris Matthews.
Four-man rush. Clawson fires a shot. It's picked off. It's picked off by Richard Sherman near sideline, and he is slammed to the ground. He's tackled by his former teammate, Chris Matthews, in front of the Ravens bench. And that time, Clawson looking to try to make the throw through the eye of the needle. That time, Richard Sherman is standing right there to make the interception.
And the reason why I wanted to talk about this, Adam, was because Russell Wilson, apparently, I don't know if he made Chris Matthews upset during his time in Seattle, got his hair pulled going down to the ground.
He did. Yeah. Or you mean Richard Sherman made him mad?
Because
he got tackled by the hair. And that's why I wouldn't wear my hair like that if I played in the NFL.
Wear it up in a bun, maybe?
Something. I mean, I don't mind the fashion look of it, just the practicality sense of it doesn't seem to make much sense. But I think
Sherman should go with the Princess Leia bun look, you know, with the new Star Wars movie coming out this weekend.
As a tribute?
Sherman okay. should go with that as a tribute and wear his hair just up inside his helmet.
He's got a nerdy side to him. I could see him maybe.
I know. That's
that.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. That's fashion advice from Brandon Schultz.
but Star Wars week. You got to go Star Wars fashion.
Yeah. Sherman with the pick, and it kind of ironic that it comes against Chris Matthews. I mean, he was supposed to be Tyler Lockett this year, right?
Right.
Yeah. Nope. Now he's playing for another team. Well, he's on the roster for another team. I don't know if you call that playing.
But he's there. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he goes on the field, but you know, same kind
so
of
so disappointing, man. You just I won't.
That didn't disappoint me at all. That's
I know
exactly
you. It was
who he is.
It was exactly what you expected, but you know, when you see a guy put together a game like that in one of the biggest moments, and then I mean, essentially David Tyree, right?
Who
has a great Super Bowl, and then you never hear from him again. And
that's his David Tyree's last catch was the helmet catch. He's never caught another pass in the NFL ever.
That's a good one to end on, though, right? If I were David Tyree, I would be okay with that.
I think
his helmet is probably in the Hall of Fame with the ball attached to it.
Yeah, because there had to have been glue on the helmet. Like, it just didn't come back off. No, that's who that guy is. You know, speaking of guys who never really had the impact that we had all hoped for, I mean, Christian Michael's available for you out there, Brandon, to come in and help fill in for Thomas Rawls. What say you on
yeah, well,
that one?
It just goes to show you what they think about Christian Michael at this point. If Duane Harris, your second leading running back in this game, is cut a couple days after the game in favor of re-signing Bryce Brown, a guy who's been on and off the roster, I'm interested to see what Bryce Brown will be able to do just because we haven't seen him on the field. But I'm also interested to see what Derek Coleman has. You know, he had the best run of the day out of any running back. One attempt, 19 yards. He played running back at UCLA. And I hope he shows something, you know, with Mr. T kind of solidified at fullback, you know, have both those guys in there behind Russell Wilson and pounding the ball. I think that'd be fun to watch.
So basically go double fullback?
Exactly. Why not?
Look, I have a hard time arguing with you on that. That would be kind of some fun smash mouth football. You're going to see the Seahawks over the next couple games. I mean, this is going to be truly by committee until Beast Mode is ready. And I was a little surprised to see them release Duane Harris. I thought he ran hard. And does he have that extra cut in him that Thomas Rawls has? No. But is he a league average looking back that, you know, will get you that 3 yards chunk? Yeah, that's who he was. And that's all you need out of this running game at this point with Russell Wilson playing like he is in the passing game.
You know,
and I thought he looked fine. I mean, not that he was ever going to be a game changer for you, but Bryce Brown's no different. Bryce Brown isn't it's some sort of game changing running back either. So okay, I mean, sure, bring him in. I think what we all can tell, and which is such a bummer, I expected a little more out of Fred Jackson. I'm disappointed, but clearly, Father Time has caught up to him and put on a backpack that's weighing about 50 pounds on his back, and like said, try playing running back like this now.
Yeah, I didn't see any kind of great burst of speed from DeJuan Harris either.
He's faster than Fred Jackson easily.
Yeah, but easily. I guess while we're wildly speculating of DeJuan Harris, what he might have done is it makes me wonder if you cut a guy immediately, you know, so close to after a game like that, if he was truly prepared and ready to go into a game. You know, it kind of makes you wonder if the guy put in the time to be prepared to go in after a guy gets injured. You know, that just makes me wonder of what a guy like that could do for a team to say, oh yeah, thanks, but we're gonna go with a guy that's kind of been bouncing on and off the roster.
Because they're the exact same guy, and they saw him. I don't think it has anything to do with preparation or want to or anything like that. He just looks like a guy who's just one of those guys.
Yeah.
You know, he's just a guy. And so they're like, well, maybe Bryce Brown could be just slightly better than just a guy, so we'll give him a shot. We'll just try it.
Yeah.
I don't think it's any knock on DeJuan Harris, you know, one way or the other. Because, look, thing is, Bryce Brown is a dumpster fire the next week. Like,
They'll probably re-sign DeJuan Harris, right?
That's what I'm saying. you don't think he's still going to be around?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. Is Turbin on a roster?
He is. He's on the Cowboys roster. Yeah. Yeah, I know. It was a month ago I saw an article where he was looking at, I think he worked out for the Patriots and then he ended up with the Cowboys, and I got excited because I thought that I thought he was still available, but yeah, still in the Cowboys. So
I got an idea. We got a conditional 7th round pick for Christian Michael from the Cowboys.
Give it back to him.
Yeah, you can have that back. We'll take Mr. Turbin back, and we'll call it good. How does that sound?
They're gearing up for their playoff run, though, Adam. They're going to make a run at that.
I think they are. I think they're actually statistically eliminated now.
Are they really?
I think so. I'm not 100% sure.
Oh, because you do have Washington, New York, and Philly, kind of all three, kind of at that at that same level.
Yeah, that magic number level where they've, you know, eclipsed as many wins as the Cowboys could possibly have.
Well, let's talk about playoffs while we're on the subject, Adam, because now we see where the Seahawks are in the playoff hunt. You know, they're kind of dialed into that 5 seed with that win over Minnesota. Now they could lose that, obviously, if they lose too many games, and they could slip back to the 6 seed. But the Seahawks very much able to clinch a playoff berth with a win this weekend. I saw an article on Seahawks.com. There's a few teams we kind of generally want to root to lose, one of those being the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The Seahawks get in. Probably the easiest way they get in is with a Buccaneers loss to the St. Louis Rams, so it kind of feels weird that we'd be rooting for the Rams to win this weekend. And then also if the Giants lose to the Carolina Panthers, which seems pretty easy. So if the Rams win, the Panthers win, and the Seahawks win, we are in the playoffs this weekend. Another way they could get in, another Tampa Bay loss. But if Washington loses to the Buffalo Bills, again, it kind of seems likely, although the Bills are now out of it. Are they out of it statistically? No, it's just the Dolphins out of it statistically in the East. So, I know that would make you happy. And then, you know, there's a roundabout way that if the Seahawks win, the Bucks lose, the Falcons lose, the Jaguars lose. Or wait, no, the Bucks, the Falcons, because they play Jacksonville. If the Vikings lose to the Bears and the Packers beat the Raiders. So if all those four things happen, plus a Seahawks win, then the Seahawks clinch. So,
you know how else the Seahawks clinch? By just winning their last 3 games.
Yeah, that would be ideal.
You know, like, I mean, they take all those scenarios out of it, and you're just like, that's all they got to do. They control their own destiny. you know, in the sense, especially for the five seed, which we've talked about at nauseam, is so huge,
mm-hmm.
you know, depending on who you're going to play out of the NFC East, because you know that's how that's going to work out.
Mm-hmm.
It, unless one of the other division leaders has some sort of crazy collapse, but that ain't happening. So, yeah, I mean, I would be cool to have some of those little scenarios play out with, like, Tampa losing and maybe the Giants going down and the Seahawks winning and having that clinched. That would feel good, of course, especially when – remember back when we were 2-4 and we were under a 10% chance to make the playoffs?
Yeah.
Statistically?
Yeah.
And here we are.
And it's like a 90% certainty at this point.
Unreal. It's unreal. And they got to stop doing this to me, man.
I know.
They got to stop.
I know. They do.
Yeah.
Well, what do you say we get on to talking a little bit of Browns football, Adam? Because the Seahawks now... and maybe we don't have to spend a whole lot of time with it because it's the Browns. But yeah. The Seahawks return home this weekend to take on the Cleveland Browns, who beat our division rival San Francisco 49ers in Cleveland. Johnny Manziel gets it done, Adam. Do you see him having that same kind of magic when he comes on the road to the home of the 12th man?
Well, considering Mike Pettine came out today and was basically saying that Johnny Manziel and Russell Wilson were more or less, you know, similar. I guess it's possible that Manziel could come out and have MVP kind of numbers, you know, that rival only a couple quarterbacks that have ever done it in history. But I would think that there's more a chance of Venus careening out of its orbit right now and colliding with Earth in the next 30 days. Like, I mean, it's just, sure, it's possible in some weird, crazy universe, but it ain't happening. Like, it's that simple. Look, Johnny Manziel is gonna be, he's gonna have a really rough go when that defensive line is tearing after him like they've torn after the last few quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care how mobile he is and all that, it's gonna be a long day for him in that putrid offense. You combine that with that putrid defense that they have here. Like, I mean, again, this is another 2-3 score victory for the Seahawks. There's no matchup in this game where you look across the line and you're like, oh, Cleveland's kind of got an advantage there.
No, it's not at the receiver position. It's not the defense. They've been, you know, talk about injuries, man. Injuries is affecting everybody. It seems like more and more this year than in any other year, but clearly the Cleveland Browns struggling with injury on defense. You know, Manziel being their quarterback, he's only in there because of an injury to their starter. And then injuries at the receiver position too. You're seeing them actually start looking at Terrell Pryor, you know, former quarterback, in there in the wide receiver position, and that's, we could see Terrell Pryor versus Richard Sherman. That could be the big wide receiver cornerback matchup, and I like that matchup, Adam.
This shows you how bad Dwayne Bowe has gotten. Because he can't even get on the field.
No, he's been a healthy scratch for weeks and weeks.
Yeah. How long have I been saying Dwayne Bowe's terrible?
Well,
for years.
Apparently, he can't even wrap his head around the playbook in Cleveland, and he's wondering why he can't get on the field. He has 3 catches this all season. And for a guy that makes as much money as he does, he should be, you know, speaking of guys, he was almost my do better this week because of the fact of how much money the guy makes and how little he's been able to see the field. And if you're pulling in a check like that, I would expect you to be doing everything that you can possible. Memorize the playbook backwards and forwards. Offer to play offensive line instead of, you know, one of the left guards. Do whatever you can to get on the field, because get better at special teams, for crying out loud. Because if you're pulling in that kind of paycheck and you're a scratch on game day, there's something seriously wrong.
Hey, look, as Jalen Rose is fond of saying, keep getting them checks.
Yeah, I guess.
Keep getting them checks, Dwayne Bowe. I'm not mad at you. Like, that's fine. Like, keep getting them checks. This is a business, and we've seen this business chew up and spit out guys that maybe deserved more. And, you know, now we got a guy who's on the other end of it with Dwayne Bowe. And look, that's how the universe works, man. It all balances out, and that's how this is working with him getting that money. Maybe give a little extra to charity, though, like whatever that he already does, because I'm sure he does. I don't think he's a bad guy. Just give maybe double that. because you're getting some charity right now if you're in, you know, your own life with that contract.
Yeah. Now, clearly a guy that is needed on that team when they're going to a quarterback who's converted to wide receiver, and that's one of their best options with Hartline going down. That's saying something about a guy. So, that's the situation that the Browns receivers are in at this point. Johnny Manziel, you know, that's who he's going to be throwing to.
And Benjamin.
Benjamin's
good. He's a
nice,
quick, shifty receiver. I think we got to see Jeremy Lane matched up against him. He feels like the best matchup for that guy.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be great to see. And then the other is Barnage, the tight end. He's a fine tight end.
Yeah,
he really is.
That's true. Yeah. And they didn't they lock him up recently too?
They did.
And
they just extended him. Yeah.
And yeah, you see a guy like the tight end that they got rid of that went down to Miami, who was a pretty good tight end, and they had one waiting in the wings with Barnage.
Yeah, exactly. And look, they have some weapons, I guess, in that sense, but look, this is just a bad game. And there only Seahawks fans are gonna be watching this game. I don't even think Browns fans will watch. I mean, in the clink against this team, the way they're playing right now.
Yeah.
I love the idea that this is just a stat patter for Russell. Like, just to put him just a little closer to the MVP conversation.
Yeah, do what he did and do it five games in a row.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and just keep throwing five touchdowns a game. That'd be really fun to watch. Although this Ravens game though, Brandon.
Yeah.
It wasn't that. I mean, it was fun to watch, but it was.
It wasn't
boring.
Vikings fun because
no.
The Vikings, you knew that they were a playoff team,
yeah,
and so it made it a lot more fun. And Adrian Peterson on the other side of the ball, they didn't. The Ravens don't have those similar types of names. You know, they don't have the defense. You know, with the injuries that they have, that obviously Minnesota, their defense hurt with injuries. But then you see them go, and the Minnesota defense goes on the road to Arizona and holds Carson Palmer to 23 points. So
right,
that defense is still pretty decent.
Yeah, it is pretty decent, and unfortunately, the Vikings offense set up some of those scores for the Cardinals.
Yeah.
With the end around that went awry and things of that nature. So yeah, I mean, you saw them come out and play a close game. They were in that game up to the
all
end.
The way down to the end.
Yeah, if
they just kick a field goal with 13 seconds left,
I don't disagree with the call to try to get a couple extra yards there.
I would have liked to see Bridgewater get out of the pocket a little bit to have that option to throw it away if he needed to. And that way that you don't have something like that happen.
Well, Teddy's been one of the better quarterbacks. Like if you look, I believe it was passer rating. It's Russell 1 in the fourth quarter and Teddy 2.
Yeah.
Or 3. So to put the ball in his hands in a critical moment and make the right decision, man, you can't fault the coaching staff for putting it in his hands. I mean,
you're trying to build trust with a young quarterback.
Absolutely. So I'm fine with it. And again, it would have been cool to see the Cardinals lose, but it was kind of cool that the Vikings lost. So, really, it didn't hurt my feelings either way. It was a good day. It was a good night of football.
Yeah, the Cardinals kind of do have a stranglehold on that NFC West title at this point. And
that's fine. Let them cruise into the playoffs feeling all good about themselves and then bring on the Cardinals.
Yeah.
I can't wait to end their season in the playoffs. And we'll know what's happening.
We'll see if we get that opportunity. I'm kind of curious to see. I'm a little bit conflicted on who I want to see get that number 6 seed, Adam, because I would kind of like to see the Vikings go on a run toward the end of the season, finish out atop the NFC Central, put the Packers into that 6 seed. Because,
whoa, it took a step on the Wayback Machine. It's the NFC Central now.
Yeah, they're
the
north.
NFC North. Yeah.
I've done that multiple times on this podcast, calling it the Central.
I know. It's kind of fun.
I still can't get that out of my mind.
Yeah.
But winning the NFC North and because if the Packers, I don't see the Vikings going on the road, making a run and beating anybody necessarily to make it to the NFC Championship. But I could see the Packers starting to put things back together and maybe beating some teams, maybe going on the road. And no, you're shaking your head. But I still think that I'd like to see an NFC Championship game once again in CenturyLink. And I don't know who else is going to do that in the number 6 spot.
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess there's that. But the idea that the Packers could go on a run in the playoffs, that's not happening. They're just, they are a train wreck in a lot of ways. I mean, they can barely get out of their own way every single game right now. I don't see anything that they're doing well as a football team. They're just not going to just turn it on in the playoffs. I mean, sure, Aaron Rodgers could have one hot game. I get that. But they're not winning two playoff games.
No.
There's no way. There's no way.
Well, thanks for ruining my dream of a third straight NFC championship at the clink, Adam.
Hey, that doesn't mean that whoever else takes the sixth seed doesn't go on some inexplicable... I would say that the Vikings have a better chance of going on an inexplicable run in the playoffs as a sixth seed than the Packers do. I mean, think about the type of football that they play. It's smash mouth, run the ball, no mistakes, and good defense and great special teams.
Yeah.
That's a formula that can win you a game or two in the playoffs. It's probably not going to take you to the Super Bowl this year, but that's a type of game that's portable. And when you talk about going up against a team like Arizona, while the game would probably be in the desert and the weather ought to be good, look, I mean, it's just weather games happen. It's that time of year, and the Cardinals having that vertical offense. I like the Vikings' chances a lot better. Not that I'm saying they'll do it,
yeah.
But if I have to choose between Packers or Vikings to try to be that team to give you your NFC Championship game at the clink, Brandon, I'd put my chips on Vikings.
All right. Well, we'll see how it plays out over the next few weeks. See if one of these teams gets on a good, solid streak going to the playoffs, because we've seen that happen with teams, you know, toward the end of the year. You know, I think back to the 2005 Steelers, you know, how they got into the playoffs, you know, just snuck in with the sixth seed and went on a tear. So it can happen, and a team can get hot. And
not only that can it happen, it's been statistically true that the sixth seed has made it to the Super Bowl more often than the fifth seed has.
Oh, so maybe the Seahawks want the sixth seed.
Nah, because you can still make it as the fifth, and that is an easier route this year, no doubt.
Yeah. Especially taking on the NFC East.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no doubt about that.
That's probably what's going to happen. So it's probably going to be those two NFC North teams facing off against one another again in the playoffs in that first round. If the Carolina Panthers, you know, they're close to locking up a bye, and the Arizona Cardinals close to locking up a bye. So it's probably going to be those North teams facing off.
Yeah. Should be interesting. If you're a fan of the NFC Central North, then you'll
I'm going to keep calling it the Central.
That's fine. Like, you know, I appreciate you sticking to some old school things and, you know, get off my lawn at the same time.
Exactly.
No, I get it. All right, man. What do you say we get the second half of the show? I know there's emails.
We got emails. We got some do better, better life.
Seems like there might have been a phone call somewhere in there, too, that maybe it's not pertinent anymore since we didn't get to the Ravens preview.
Yeah.
I don't know, but there's stuff, and you guys are awesome.
There's stuff to talk about, and we'll be right back to talk about it. Welcome back to the Seahawkers Podcast, the official podcast of the official booster club of the Seattle Seahawks. Thanks to you who have visited patreon.com/Seahawkers podcast and chipped in a couple bucks donation, going to Patreon and signing up to be one of our patrons. And special thanks to Ellie, Ron, Alicia, and Jameson for joining this past week. It's cool to see so many folks, especially when I look down that list on Patreon that shows like people who have that they only donate to one podcast and it's ours. That's a cool feeling.
It is a very cool feeling. It's like having that one girl that looks at you and she looks at you, you know, not like everybody else. She only sees you. That's how I feel when those guys only donate to this podcast. Like, thanks for seeing us. Like, gives us a warm fuzzy.
And also a thanks to Jeff Lamont. He sent me one of his children's Christmas books, The Song of the Christmas Tree, and made a donation to the show, too, Adam. So...
very cool. Well, thanks, man.
A little Merry Christmas present from Jeff Lamont.
Thank you very much for that. That's very cool. That's very, very cool.
Well, Adam, before we get into the emails, there was a transaction that came across. We have breaking news during the show, although, you know, it's Wednesday and people probably won't be listening to this until Thursday morning. But yes, breaking news for us. You know, we mentioned Kristen Michael being out there on the waiver wire. And what's the news, Adam?
Well, apparently, as per Pete Carroll, Kristen Michael is now back in the fold after we just sat and were like, you know, in the first half and being
They think of Kristen Michael with him being out there on the waiver wire. They're willing to drop Dewan Harris to sign Michael. So he'll be back, I guess.
One of the reasons doing this podcast is hilarious or things just like this. I don't know how many times we've either recorded something or right after we were done, like something has broken that has totally changed things in. You know, this is kind of the same thing. So that's pretty hilarious. And in fact, my phone just buzzed too. And it says Seahawks signed running back Kristen Michael.
So there you go. I have that signed Kristen Michael rookie card, Adam. It's not too late. That could be a worthwhile prize in the Pick'em League.
It could be. Could be. I won't be getting that because I'm still in the lead out of the three of us. So
that's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
But that's some funny stuff. So we'll see what impact he has going up against the Browns. I don't think it'll be much. And one last thing, I just saw this quick quote from Paul Kruger, and they asked him about Manziel compared to Russell Wilson. He's like, absolutely, yes. I think they're very comparable. That's why they'll lose this game. If they think that they're at all comparable, then they are not prepared. They are just not prepared.
Hey, that's just a veteran looking out for one of the younger players on his team. So just take it that way.
Yeah, or they're misunderestimating Russell Wilson.
Yes, definitely misunderestimation.
Yeah, that's what I think.
That's totally a word, too, I think.
It is. Our president said it once, so it must be.
Which one? Which president?
W.
Okay.
Either that or somebody doing a parody of him said it.
Yeah.
Either way.
It was probably
a Will Ferrell thing or something.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Which is fine, but yeah.
You could still attribute to him. You know, it's like Tina Fey, you know, and how we attribute seeing Russia out our window to Sarah Palin.
Yeah, exactly. Now, whatever your affiliation is, like, you have to admit, at the very least, W was good for some fun quotes.
Yes.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, his the Bushisms were pretty fun. I do miss that. I do miss that.
Well, getting into some email, Adam, let's start with one from Peter. Says, I've noticed the term momentum used a lot recently, and particularly by commentators of Seahawks games, because those are the only games that matter. It seems to me that the term is used to describe things going particularly well for a team for a period of time, until things don't go well. It seems like there's an implication of future performance based on good things happening. So if a team has momentum, they're expected to continue performing well. This seems problematic to me, though, given the Seahawks can be said to have had momentum in several games this year, only to lose in the fourth quarter. I'm reminded of the largely debunked notion of, quote, hot hands in basketball and seemingly unnaturally long runs
of
coin
flips. How was that debunked? How was that debunked, by the way?
He just said, it's debunked. So obviously, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've also seen people get quite animated at the roulette table when black has come up 6 or 7 or 8 times in a row. Statistics show that each spin is an individual event that has nothing to do with a previous spin. Same with coin flipping. Momentum would therefore be an inappropriate way to characterize these runs, or what I'm going to call statistical clusters. There's probably a better name out there. My question is, how do you tell real momentum, if there is such a thing, from what I'm calling non-predictive statistical clustering? Come on, Peter.
All right, Brandon, you're a statistical cluster.
I'll show you a statistical cluster.
No, I think Peter was probably good at math.
Yeah.
Would be my guess. And
or
this is
physics, because I think Peter's confusing momentum with Newton's first law of motion. And that's, you know, the object in motion tends to stay in motion. And that's not what this is. And it doesn't have anything to do with coin flips either, because that's a statistical event. And momentum is something that's not it's not measurable in terms of statistics.
Well, and that's just it. See, I think he was trying to tie it into being a statistical event. And just like you said, it's not. See, here's the thing about momentum, and Peter and I are going to disagree about momentum real quick. It absolutely exists, and it's not just something that people say. And the reason I say that is when the offense strings together 4, 5, 6 plays, or 3, 4 drives in a row, right, mm-hmm. where it's moving it up and down the field, there is something to be said for confidence. And how many times have you seen great players go on bad streaks because they've just lost their confidence a little bit? And what the quote momentum does, all that is a player or a team or a unit gaining some confidence and stringing together a lot of great plays because they're playing without that fear, that extra voice in the back of their head that's making them second guess themselves, even if it's just for the shortest of time periods, you know, half a tick. And they just let it rip and they just play. And they play loose and they play free. And that's what I believe momentum is, mm-hmm. is having gained confidence and playing loose and free. Mm-hmm. And the thing is all that can be destroyed with one bad play.
Right.
And yeah, it can flip and then suddenly the other team wins in the fourth quarter, which has happened to the Seahawks a few times. She's a fickle mistress, that momentum. But it's
one of those things that it's there until it's not, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. A lot like my last two girlfriends. Like
there until they're not.
Yeah. And then they weren't. So that's how that goes.
All right. The next email here is from Josh in the United Kingdom. Says, I just wanted to let you guys know what a great job you do for Seahawks fans across the globe. When your podcast comes out, it's one of the highlights of my week. And I love your analysis and opinions on previous and upcoming games. I also wanted to take the opportunity to laugh at anybody who said the Seahawks were finished or that we couldn't make the playoffs. A wise man once said, Richard Sherman, don't open your mouth about the best. And the same goes for Wilson haters. You can have your Tom Brady's and your Cam Newton's. I would swap Russell for nobody. Also, I have a question. Is Marshawn Dunn in? Oh, see, this came in and before the Ravens game.
Right.
Asked, is Marshawn Dunn in Seattle with Thomas Rawls showing up each and every week? And actually, it kind of still applies because you mentioned earlier in the show, Adam, the idea that it still could be Marshawn's last year, kind of that swan song in the playoffs, and kind of knowing that, next year, it kind of is still a question mark, I think, with Marshawn Lynch. But he says, lastly, just wanted to say, keep doing what you're doing to Adam and Brandon. And would somebody please punch Jared in the face? Go Hawks, from Josh.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I think my daughter, Josh, will take you up on that and punch Jared square in the face for you. she's down to do that at any given time. I've never seen her take glee in anybody else's suffering like she does his.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know why that is. But, I think this could be Marshawn's last season, and we talked about that a little bit earlier.
And I think the time to assess that is after the Seahawks, you know, finish off the season and hopefully holding up Lombardi. And then we could talk about what Marshawn's status is at that point.
Sure. No, that makes sense there. I'm trying to think of some of his other observations. Oh, the people who were saying that we were done earlier and he wanted to laugh at them. Yeah. I'm right here. I'm taking it.
That's okay.
I'm taking it. Because, like I said, that was my way of coping, putting that expectation level there. And now that we're here, I'm jazzed. Like, right. Think of how, like, if you're expecting, like, a pair of socks for Christmas and somebody, like, buys you, I don't know, an Xbox.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's how this feels right now. My expectations were socks, and I'm getting an Xbox. And I'm happy about this. Yeah.
Now, it is a difference. Next one here from Stoff in England says, hey, guys, hope you're doing well. I just wanted to say how much I love the podcast here in Sheffield, England. Another one from England. It really is something I look forward to listening to every week, even when we lose. And I listen while I'm at work because of the job I do. It can take 3 or 4 hours of start to stop listening or stop, start listening until I hear it all. So it fills the half of my Thursday. It helps me stay in the loop with the team I've supported since 1981, when my godfather, who moved to Seattle from Chicago, started sending 8 years old me a crap load of Seahawks gear. Nice. My UK school friends thought I was crazy, but a lifelong love was born. I didn't choose the Hawks. They chose me. Love the bonus show comparison between Wilson and Newton, and fully agree, Russ for MVP. Keep up the good work from England. Go Hawks.
It's kind of funny. I love the team chose him. I mean, that happens, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's how it happens for a lot of people in their fandom. And that's pretty cool, man. And good for, what was his uncle?
Stoff.
That gave him?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Stoff's uncle that sent it to him. Yeah. From Seattle.
Yeah. Yeah. Good on your uncle. Like, he's my honorary do better or better at life right now.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
See, and as you think about that coming up in this Christmas season, you know, think of what you could do for a young kid, a young niece or nephew. If they're not tied to any particular team, you could make a difference in their fandom going forward in life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Be that influence on some some young person's life. Bring in another 12. I've converted a few myself, and it feels good. Let everybody drink the Kool-Aid.
Here's one from Al Higginbottom. Says, hey, guys, I just wanted to check in and let you know I'm buying myself a Patreon subscription for Christmas. Keep up the good work.
That sounds like more like he's buying us a Patreon subscription for Christmas.
Yeah.
And thank you.
I also hope Adam got around to buying that bar fridge.
Oh, no, but it's okay. It's okay. Because now it's winter, and I can just open the window and just put the beers just right outside the window.
Okay. Well, we'll have to get around to that. We'll get around to that, Adam.
It's there. We just need to do it. Like, I just don't know why I haven't.
Yeah. My wife and I recently got back from our honeymoon, where we attended games at Dallas and the incredible game versus Pittsburgh a few weeks back. You were at the Pittsburgh game, Al, and I didn't see you there? That is a mistake.
Oh, man.
I know. Yeah. Once again, the team got it done, and now 5-0 when I'm in the building. So I may have to start saving for the playoffs. After the excitement of the Pittsburgh game, my wife is now absolutely hooked on the Hawks, which has definitely improved my chances of coming again in the next few years. We had a fantastic time and can't wait to come back. The listener from Sydney, sorry I'm bad with names, mentioned that he is heading over for the Browns game this week and his first Hawks game. For any traveling fans, and really any fan, I would definitely recommend the stadium tour, which he can do on the Friday or Saturday before. You can buy tickets at the Pro Shop downtown. It's great to have a look around the stadium, be able to walk through the tunnel and go onto the field and get a sense of what to expect come game day. I was surprised to find another Australian on the stadium tour who was over for his first game and was just in town for 4 days as well to see a few English guys in the same boat. This team really has a global reach. Lastly, I hope you two and all the listeners have a fantastic Christmas, and fingers crossed the team can stay hot for a big playoff run. Cheers from Al.
Thanks a lot, Al. I'm glad you had a good time when you were over for the Steelers game. And he's right about getting to the stadium. Well, not early just on game day, but the idea of going and checking it out beforehand. It is a cool experience. Mm-hmm. It is a very cool experience.
And the thing is, Al, the Patreon subscription could be the least expensive Christmas present you buy. You know, 50 cents a month. You could do even less if you wanted to. But 50 cents a month, that's like $6 a year. It still leaves you a few bucks where you can take care of your garbage truck driver, your mail carrier, you know, I don't think you have any kids, Al, but, you know, the kids' teachers, the folks like that. So, you know,
are you bribing your children's teachers?
I, every year, Adam.
Oh, I've been doing it wrong.
You have.
I make them look after her for 5 days a week and have to deal with her, and I don't give them anything for Christmas. I guess I'm basically Scrooge here.
You're the one making a mistake here. That's a must, right, on the top of the on the Christmas list.
I had no idea.
Yeah. Okay. So, thanks again, Al. And one more here, and this one came in before the Ravens game as well, but catching up on them. One from Doc Scott, and I feel like I should bump a little bit of Doc's own tunes as a music bed or something when he emails the show, because Doc, you know,
every time, and have him pick out which one that he wants.
That's like, true.
Yeah, so Doc, do that, and you get your own beats. Your own beats,
right? Yeah, I'm just gonna go with some shadow boxing, I think, for this one, and you know, if Doc tells me otherwise, I can go with something different. But
I like it.
Says, hey guys, well, after what was a turbulent start to the season, the Seahawks are looking good when it really matters. After last week's slugfest against the Steelers, the week was nearly perfection as they showed an up-and-coming Vikings team that they are not ready yet to play with the big boys. Earlier in the season, when everyone was blaming the defense for blowing fourth quarter leads, I was arguing the case that some, maybe a lot of the blame was on Russell Wilson for too many three and outs late in the game and keeping the D on the field for too long. But now, with key weapons Lynch and Graham missing, he has stepped up to lead the team and show he is worth every penny of his franchise contract. The momentum is building, and I am confidently looking forward to postseason football. What we have that others don't is experience. We know how to get to the big game. We know how to win the big games, and we know when to play our best football when it really matters. What makes the prospect of the playoffs even more exciting this year is the fact we can exact revenge against the Packers, the Cardinals, and the Panthers. Who knows? Maybe all of them, topped with a crushing victory over the Bengals in the Super Bowl. See, that was before Dalton was out, but he could be back for the playoffs. We don't know. Thanks, as always, for your hard work. Your podcast keeps me informed and entertained all around the world. Go Hawks! From Doc Scott.
Right on. Go Hawks, Doc. Great email. And yeah, I think we had talked about that a lot too. Brandon, was the offense not converting early in the year and how that affected the D a little bit. And then we talked about it earlier in this pod too, about the idea that I look at the offense in clutch times now more than I'm looking for the defense.
Sure.
And how I think that could kind of go through going forward. But, you know, the other thing that it maybe Doc would consider, I'd like for us to have some beats that run as a bed as we do all the email. I think that would be cool every week, like as a production value thing. I mean, maybe Doc would be kind enough to let us use something, or maybe if he has a suggestion or something like that, pretty rad. I'd like that.
I would like that. That's a good thought, Adam.
And I have one every so often. Like, yeah. Even a blind squirrel, like, you know?
It's so cool, you know, with Doc, you know, being, you know, the kind of the global going around the world and DJing all over the world. And, you know, and we have Jeff who wrote a book and sent it to us. There's a whole lot of talent, you know, DCH with his graphics design, you know, designing the podcast logo that he sent us. There is a lot of cool talent just among the listeners of this show. And it's really neat to see.
It's stupid. It's stupid awesome. Like, I mean, it really is. I mean, John Davidson, Time Flies, or like whatever.
Yeah,
it is, man. Like
Clinton Bonner with his 3-on-3 outposts that we've been putting up on the Facebook page and out on Twitter. Those are great posts.
Rochelle with her knitting and stuff. You know, like it's pretty outstanding. Yeah. It really is.
No,
you guys are incredible.
Yep. Indeed. Speaking of people who are incredible, we got a review from Italy, Adam. Every once in a while, I get the monthly overseas reviews. So if you're overseas, we see these. And this one's from Al_Renee from Italy. And holy catfish, this is a good podcast. Adam and Brandon deliver excellent Hawks updates and entertaining commentary. Do better and listen to the podcast. And it's titled Catfish and Good Podcast.
I like how that's caught on as a thing.
I know.
The catfishing thing. I really do. I can't tell you how much that delights me anyway. And thanks so much for the review, man. We do really appreciate that. When you guys review the podcast on iTunes, it helps us be found in iTunes in other 12s when they're looking for something to listen to. So that's huge. The other thing you guys can do that we never ask is hit subscribe. Hit the button.
Subscribe. Yeah. If you listen on the web and listen that way, you know, that's great. But it's even more helpful if you listen to your podcast via some app, you know, whether it's a podcast app or whether it's one that I like is Pocket Casts. There's some other ones out there. All podcast app where you can just search for Seahawkers podcast. You can search for the All 32 Picks and IPAs. Hit subscribe and get everything right on your phone. It's a great way to listen.
It really is. And like I said, kind of helps the show be found. So we appreciate that.
All right, Adam, what do you say on to do better and better at life? I'm going to start us out this week. And I saw an interesting story come across this past few days where the NFL is considering enacting officiating changes for the postseason and allow representatives of the league office to be in more frequent contact with on-field officials during games. And this article is coming from Mark Maskey on the Washington Post. And I guess when I think, Adam, of the worst time to consider making officiating changes and how you officiate games, it would be in the playoffs, in the postseason, when games matter the most. And the idea that the thing that's really confusing to me and saying that now they're going to have a better ability to focus more on one specific game because, you know, in the playoffs, there's only one game going on at a time, right? So that's going to be their opportunity to be more involved, to be able to focus in on one game. But to me, that's the absolute worst time to make any kind of decision. And you have 3 weeks left in the season. If you're actually thinking about doing this leading up to going into the playoffs, you have games where you have the you have your Thursday night game, you have your Sunday night game, you have your Monday night game. If you're absolutely dead set on making changes and trying something out, you try it out in the last few weeks in games maybe that don't make as much of an impact on the postseason as actual postseason games do. So for the NFL, for considering making officiating changes where you do have that. And look, we don't know how much this is going to have an impact on a game. I've sat through games where the officials being in contact, trying to figure out what's going on the field, where it's taken a long time, where they stop. And I don't want my postseason games to last 4 hours long while we're trying to have some kind of contact with the officials that aren't on the field and making changes where maybe they don't, where it's not clear going into the postseason. It just seems like the worst possible time for the NFL for even considering it. Do better.
I agree, man. It'd be like them changing the extra point rule just for the postseason and not having done it all year.
Right.
And not having tried it out in the preseason.
Yeah, let's just see what happens going into the postseason and see if it has an impact on games.
That's mad. Man, Roger Goodell stinks as a commissioner. Like, I mean, what commissioner allows that to happen on their watch? Where you start tinkering with fundamental parts of the game right as you enter the postseason, man. Like, you can't be doing that. Well, my do better this week comes from none other than Planet Prisco. Pete Prisco writing something from another solar system yet again. I don't know where this man lives, but it is not in our galaxy.
No.
I want to start a new segment, Brandon, so I don't have to waste my do betters on him. It's called Planet Prisco,
yeah,
where we just take a visit to Planet Prisco like once every 2 or 3 weeks. That seems about how often that he pops something up.
Yeah.
So, yeah I think it'd be good because I hate this guy. When I say that, I say it like I sports hate this guy. I don't know him personally. He might be a fine dude, but I hate what he writes. He sucks. And this is just another example of the idiocy of Pete Prisco. And it starts out like this. Here's the title of the article, just to show you how conflicted this poor man is. See, I'm almost to the point now where I'm starting to feel sorry for him, and I'll tell you why here in just a sec. Title of the article: After Further Review, Why Russell Wilson, Seattle's O, Are Taking Flight. So that seems complimentary, right?
Oh, this is a positive article by Pete Prisco.
Like, well, no, this is after the Vikings game, all right? So okay. This doesn't even include the Ravens game. So I'm like, okay, and it starts out, and he's like, yeah, you know, I mean, he's playing his best football right now, and he's got some big numbers, and it's kind of putting him a little bit in the MVP talk, and obviously Marshawn Lynch isn't there, and Jimmy Graham isn't there, and he's clearly playing better from the pocket, because, you know, as players age, they know they can't just keep running around and blah, blah, blah.
This reminds me, Adam, I was listening to Mike Freeman on the Jim Rome show, and he said something ridiculous about Antonio Brown during one of the games. Oh, he said something about who's the other guy across from Brown for the Steelers? Not Wheaton, but
Martavis Bryant.
Martavis Bryant said something about how Martavis Bryant might be the best receiver on that team.
Oh, stop it.
And that was kind of the reaction of everybody, right? And then So on listening to him on Jim Rome, he goes, yeah, that was stupid. He was actually a media guy that backtracked on a comment that he made earlier. And I'm like, you know what? I wish more guys would just recognize their mistakes.
Exactly.
And say, you know, I made a mistake here. Yes, Antonio Bryant far better than Antonio Brown far better than Martavis Bryant.
Look, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's exactly where I am with Pete at this point. It's like, there comes a point where you're just like, all right.
It's
like,
time to say you're wrong.
Yeah, and it's okay. And it's okay. But he's struggling so hard with it right now. And so this is where he goes from there. And so I'll read you a little bit of the article here, just so you kind of know what I'm talking about. And he was just going on about how he's playing better from the pocket, can't scramble forever. He says, so, like all good quarterbacks, it appears Wilson has made a concerted effort to stand in and make throws, rather than leave and create with his legs. That might not be as exciting to the fans of the Wilson cult, including many in the media, and you know who you are. But it's the right move for a quarterback who has the smarts to make it work. I've been one of the most vocal Wilson critics. I think he's a good quarterback. While most think he's great, my biggest criticism of his play has been that he isn't great from the pocket. I don't care how his cult twists the numbers, but he's not a stand-in and make reads and throws quarterback, and he still isn't. So
what?
First off, he can't be bothered with your facts, logic, and reason. Don't twist those stats that are just like, oh, I don't know, Russell is the best in the league this entire year from the pocket statistically, any way you want to slice it. Don't twist the true fact of that. Can't be bothered with that. And so, because we're all part of the Wilson cult. I don't know. Are you on the newsletter, Brandon? I don't get anything. Is there a service that we're supposed to attend?
There's a packet of Kool-Aid mix that you mix in with your recovery water, I think.
Ah, there it is. Some nano bubbles. Maybe that's what he's talking about. I don't know. But he basically goes on and he says he expected to turn on the tape from the last 3 weeks and see a bunch of pinpoint throws where he's standing in the pocket and, you know, that he has all these stats to back up that he's doing it from the pocket. But he feels the numbers are misleading. And here are the reasons why.
Why are the numbers misleading? Is his eyeballs, are they misleading too?
So first off, the reason why the numbers are misleading are the throws have been easy throws. Okay. So guys have been open and he's hit them. Now, I don't know about you, Brandon, but I see Tom Brady make at least 12 easy completions a game to dump offs to the running backs, to, you know, little hitch routes, all that, like just that short passing game and, you know, run after the catch and all that. I never hear anybody say, well, look at all the easy throws he gets.
There's actually a stat for this, Adam. There's a stat for easy throws,
yeah.
And it's the ones that are least likely to result in a turnover, and you know who's the best in the league at that? It's Tom Brady. Tom Brady makes the most easy throws.
Right, no, but Russell Wilson's not a pinpoint pocket passer because he makes easy throws. So how dare he hit the easy ones when he has the chance? And that's just all because of scheme. And the other reason why he has these easy throws that nobody else gets killed on, whether that's Peyton Manning when he was with the Broncos killing it with all that short passing game. He was the greatest in the MVP, right? Even though he had all those easy throws with those elite weapons. No, he's still the greatest, great from the pocket. Russell's not, though, because he has the same easy throws. But the reason he has easy throws is the scheme, and then also because, and this is what he writes, that Russell is doing an amazing job before the snap, reading the defense, shifting his protections, understanding where to go with the football, and do all the things mentally in the game, and it's just making it too easy on himself.
He's too good mentally, and it's making it too easy for him as a quarterback. What?
What is the biggest hallmark, one of the biggest hallmarks of great pocket passers? I mean, look, Peyton Manning, the reason why he's a surefire Hall of freaking Famer is because he destroyed teams with his brain. And everybody looked at him and said, look at the great Peyton Manning. But then when Russell Wilson does it, Pete Prisco comes out and says, how dare he? He should play stupid and make hard throws. Otherwise, I can't trust that he's actually good from the pocket. So that's one of the reasons. It goes on.
That's just the first one?
Yeah. He says, so to speak to the scheme thing, he's like, well, you know, one of the big knocks on Russell, right, has always been, you know, he's got Marshawn Lynch in that great defense, and so they just run a bunch of read option and play action for Russell, and he's feasting off of everything that Marshawn is beasting on, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the big knock, and Pete's been at the forefront of that, right? So then he has this paragraph here where he basically says they haven't done hardly any read option. They haven't done hardly any play action now that beast mode's been down. And in fact, they've gone to the spread a lot, which they have. And he just is like, yeah, that's just Seahawks scheming better. So he starts to do the opposite of what he's been killing him for the past 3 years of his career, just run and play action and run and read option. He goes in, starts playing out of the empty formation when everybody knows you're throwing. And suddenly, now that's a detriment to him, too. That's a reason why you can't believe he's being a pinpoint pocket passer. It goes on.
Oh, no.
And this might be the most absurd one to me. It says one of the reasons Russell's getting all of these easy throws is because his running ability opens up some of the passing lanes. And so since people have to respect that he can run the ball, then he's got easier throws, and that's why he's not as good as anybody else. He's just good. He's not great. It's because he's excellent at another portion of playing the quarterback position, and since he has that skill set, that is a detriment to him as a player. And the thing is, Do you hear him banging on Aaron Rodgers for being incredibly mobile and teams having to respect his rushing ability? And that makes it easier for Aaron? No, it's look at how amazing he is as a thrower from the pocket, and then he can run around too. Yeah, when Russell does the exact same thing, he's on him.
So let me understand this correctly. It's because Russell Wilson is so great at so many things, it makes throwing from the pocket too easy for him, and so that's why you can't give him credit.
Right. And not only that, not only that. You know, we started out, I read the little daily, and he said, you know, something great pocket passer, and he still isn't. And then he goes on to put two clips and break down two plays in the last couple games where Russell's throwing bombs for touchdowns from the pocket, getting drilled to the chest. And he's like, yeah, this was good, but there's not enough of it. How much more do you need? In the last four games, he's thrown from the pocket 99 times. 99 times. How is that not doing it enough for a completion percentage of nearly 82%? I'm not twisting any numbers, Pete. It's just here. So he starts out saying, blah, blah, blah. He's awful for all these reasons, and he's still not a great pocket passer, except for when he is.
Except
let me show you a couple
is.
Of examples of it. He's so twisted on Planet Prisco that he can't even understand that he's arguing against himself in the same freaking article. Pete, it's time to let it go. Let's free Pete. Free Pete from the sports hate that he clearly has for Russell Wilson. Let it go. It's no longer a hot take. You sound like an idiot. Let it go, Pete. Your article sucks. Your take on Russell Wilson sucks. Your general analysis of this sucks. Do better.
It seems so appropriate now to go into who's better at life than Skip Bayless. Although,
right.
Prisco's making a run for the spot now. If
we
this...
haven't even been mad at Skip for a long time.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
If Pete Prisco had his own television show or radio show, and a Seahawks player were to go on to it, and that certain Seahawks player were to say, "I'm better at life than you, Pete Prisco,"
yeah,
then it's time to change the name of the segment. But that hasn't happened yet, and that's why we're here.
Pete only has a crappy column that he writes for CBS Sports, and he doesn't actually talk to these players directly. He just makes assumptions. And then, so that's why I think we should have, you know, about an every third week visit to Planet Prisco.
Planet Prisco.
I think he gets his own deal because he is on another planet, man.
Yeah.
I don't even know.
I think you're right about this. All right. Well, on to better at life, Adam. Who you got?
All right. I'm going to go first here real quick just because it's not a huge deal, but I think it is a huge deal in the sense that Joe Hayden has now been put on IR, season-ending IR for the Cleveland Browns, and he's been out for something like 45 days with a concussion and
wow.
On a play that looked kind of innocuous anyways, but god dang, and still suffering from the symptoms. And so
yeah.
my better at life this week is for the Browns organization and the NFL and the medical staff just for – when there's a guy who is struggling with that sort of thing, making sure that he's not going to Wes Welker this and get back out on the field and put himself at risk and go ahead and shut down one of your best players for the year. Not like the Browns are going anywhere or anything like that.
Right.
But it's always hard, especially when you're a coach like Mike Pettine and you're trying to save your job right now, to agree with a dude just going on the shelf because of something that happened a month and a half ago that didn't even look bad. So, just to the Browns organization for being forward thinking and probably the NFL for being a little knee jerk reaction to this concussion film that's coming out, you know, trying to be as careful as possible with every little thing.
Mm-hmm.
Better at life than Skip Bayless, Browns organization.
Hey, you know, if that's one of the things that comes out from this movie coming out, that we're more concerned about players and head trauma, then that's a good thing for the players overall. And, you know, talk about Mike Pettine and, you know, that's a guy you know, one thing that I was impressed by is that it sounds like they're going to come out in this game against the Seahawks. And he said that we're going to go out there and cut it loose. And for a guy that's approaching the end of the season, a team that doesn't have anything to play for, he sounds like a guy who's still trying to motivate his players. And you do have to have a bit of an appreciation for that, although it does. I would be more appreciative if they just rolled over and allowed the Seahawks to win.
Sure.
But, yeah. Well, good on the Browns for doing that.
Yeah.
All right, Adam, my better at life this week. You know, as we come up on episode 100, our next one will be next week. I'm getting a little bit nostalgic when it comes to numbers, so I want to give credit to a certain sideline reporter, Adam. And there are quite a few sideline reporters who get panned for not adding much to the game, you know, similar to announcers or color guys. I think it's an easy part of the broadcast to criticize because it is so visible. And I think it's a job that can be done well. And one perfect example in particular is Michelle Tafoya, who worked the sideline for her 200th game Sunday night. That's 12 years, Adam, of covering football games and bringing something more to a job that than a lot of others that you see. So just the way she sets up storylines before the games, covers some of the unexpected things that come up that only sideline reporters that can only they can get good info on. I think it's clear she's a pro and an example for other sideline reporters to follow and how they can do their job and also a clear example of being better at life than Skip Bayless.
I'm having a real hard time getting on board with you on this one. I don't dislike Michelle Tafoya, but for her 200th interview, she started the interview out with the question like, "So you got a score right there at half? How big was that for your team?"
That's
what sideline reporters do. I hate them. I hate sideline reporters. I can't stand them. Having to listen to Tony Siragusa and his stupid dumbass stories
yes.
through the entire Ravens games. I'm so sick of it. They add nothing. Add absolutely nothing. The job is meaningless. I can't stand it. And I think Michelle Tafoya is a talent. I do. I think she could be doing other things like far better. She's got real talent.
Yeah.
This is a waste of her talent. Like, but keep getting them checks. Like, that's fine. As long as they're going to pay you for this asinine job that I can't stand. I hate them. I really do. And I just, it's dumb. It's a dumb part of the game.
Well, see, part of that issue with those questions that you're talking about, Adam, where the coaches are coming off the field at halftime, those coaches don't want to be there. They don't want to answer those questions. They don't answer those questions. So, I mean, that's just a part of the production where they say, sideline reporter, you must do this. Coach, you must do this. And they do.
And who's better for that?
Nobody.
And who's better for that? Like, that's just it. I don't need to hear, coach, big score right there at the end of the half, right? And have him be like, well, every score is a big score, you know, and we're just going to keep putting the pedal to the metal and take each play at a time here. And, you know, after some adjustments at halftime, I think we'll come out real fired up.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need, like, I'm not an NFL coach. I just made up a situation. I just gave you the canned cliche answer that they all freaking give. I can't handle it. And, like, it doesn't make my life better. You know what, NFL? Just take that 30 seconds, sell another commercial, and make yourself a little more money. I wouldn't even care. That's just something I can walk away from.
Well, there's one thing that we can agree on, Adam, and that Tony Siragusa, not a great sideline reporter. I could do without hearing from him during any
Here's piece. What Tony Siragusa is good for. He's good for 1 to 2 little anecdotes or stories about himself. Like, and he can tell you one little entertaining story, maybe two. Great guy to have a beer with, I'm sure. Maybe to sit down in a production meeting. But to go over and try to talk about the other players, half the time, he can't even get their name right. I think he called Russell Wilson by the wrong name at one point while he was talking. Like, he can't do it. He can't be allowed to anymore either. And I don't like seeing the little camera shot that pans over to him, like, rocking back and forth with his big old belly, standing at the end of the end zone, you know, adjusting his gangster glasses, like he's about ready to make a mob hit on somebody. I'm done. I'm done with Tony Siragusa.
Okay, well, listen, Adam, this was not a criticism of sideline reporters. This was a heralding of Michelle Tafoya and her 200th game. And I hope and I expect you do not disagree. Michelle Tafoya, better at life than Skip Bayless.
Like I said, I'm nothing against her. I think she's talented. I just don't like her job.
Yeah, okay. Well, yeah. Sideline reporters do better. Michelle Tafoya, better at life than Skip Bayless.
Done. I'm on board.
There,
I'm on
there board we go. Now. I'm glad okay. we cleared that up.
Yeah, that was important. That was some important
Hey, you were clearly passionate about the subject of sideline reporters, so I let you go
so
on
this week.
And crap
so
all over my better at life trying to honor somebody who's been in the
job,
done 200 games, you know, trying to recognize a leader in the industry, and you have to go off on your rant, but that's okay.
That's what I'm here for.
That's what
I'm here for. I even had one more rant to use this week, but maybe I'll save it for next week.
A teaser, then. Well, here we go.
Right. Right.
All right, Adam. Well,
I think with that.
Yeah, there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.